Sport. Grandstand Cricket.
There you go.
That's it for the day.
You can hear the bells.
And that is Stumps.
This is Grandstand at Stumps.
On ABC Radio.
ABC Sport Digital Radio. And the ABC Listen app.
It was a day in which England fought it out on the back of a fighting 100 from 22-year-old Jacob Bethell, albeit the touring team still a long way behind in the game. England leading by 119 runs, but 8 wickets down in their second innings. The match beautifully set up as we head into a fifth day, the final day of the Ashes series. It'll be the final day of this man's career as well. Welcome to Grandstand at Stumps on ABC Sport. Corbin Middlemouse alongside Stuart Clarke and Jason Gillespie, and Usman Khawaja, ahead of his last day as a Test cricketer, joins us on ABC Sport. Usman, firstly, congratulations on a wonderful 15-year career.
Thank you. Look, I'm just very grateful. Honestly, I've said it a lot, but I am. Not everyone gets the opportunity to retire on their own terms. At the home ground, my parents live still in Parramatta, so it's turned out really nice. I'm just very happy.
So you get to go to bed tonight, wake up tomorrow, you get to do it one last time?
Yeah, look.
What sort of emotion does that leave?
I mean, we just want to win. It would be a lot nicer to go out on a win and 4-1, and I think that emotion would be much higher if we can finish off and do it well. But either way, I think, you know, one more day left. I can relax after tomorrow. So one last push and then I'm good.
Give me the state of play. So 8 for 302 England. The lead's 119. You're out there. You see the pitch and how it's panned out. What do you make of where the match is situated?
Look, it's asked for the taking tomorrow. If we play well enough, bowl well enough, get him out, we can go chase the runs down. So we did a tremendous job at the end of the day today. We sort of let him go in that second session, and then, you know, Slug coming on and bowling those beautiful offies and getting that wicket. There's a like 2-second referral call. We're getting Brooke, and then we cracked it open there. So it was a really nice end to the day because it was looking a little bit dicey for a little bit.
You're not an emotional guy, I know that, but I saw some emotion in your press conference. What are the emotions going to be like tomorrow morning?
There's definitely emotion. Honestly, when I was about to come out to bat, there was emotions. I kind of welled up, and I'm like, all right, was he coming? Literally, as I was walking down, I welled up, I'm like, compose yourself, you're about to bat. So it was actually really hard. It was one of the hardest batting 10 minutes I've ever done in my life, going out there first innings. I'm normally really clear there when I went out. Well, I had to face Bethell, first of all. That's what I wasn't expecting, to face Bethell. All the imagery stuff I did wasn't facing Bethell when I first came out there. It was Tangi or someone else. So that took me out by a little bit of surprise. But it was more so that there's so many emotions going through it. It was hard to calm myself down the first 10 minutes. But once I did, it was kind of business as usual.
Are we going to see Usman Khawaja bat at the top of the order one last time?
I don't think so. But after Heddy's been absolutely crooning him. Jake started off well too. So, look, I just like to get these runs. But, you know, it's not going to be easy either way. If we get to, sometimes it is. Sometimes it isn't. You know what small run chase is like? So you either do them really easy or you have to work for them a little bit. So I'm not sure what tomorrow will hold. I mean, Heddy's already made one run chase easy, so we'll have to wait and see.
You guys get into mode as cricketers. I understand that. So you're walking off the ground. You're out for 17. The state of the test match at that stage, I mean, it was still in the balance as to, well, you're going to get the chance to bat again. Everyone at the SCG's on their feet. What was going through your mind on the way off in particular? And I noticed today the SCG groundsman's been at it. There's a thanks Aussie sign with your number on the outfield. What were you thinking walking off?
At that stage, I was very confident that I'd get another hit.
Yep.
I still am. I'm still always ready to bat. So we've played cricket too long to count our chickens. I'm batting 5, literally just takes bang, 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 and I'm in. I could be in there in the third over. You just never know. So for me, yeah, walking off, I wanted to embrace the crowd, but I don't want to start, like, you know, giving my farewell and then having to come back out and do it again. Look like an absolute idiot. Luna and I raising the bat, everyone, thank you, thank you, thank you, and then come out again. I was like, I'm not sure I can right now, but it's not about that. Honestly, if we got him out today and I didn't get to do that, I would have been perfectly fine. I've had a great week and it's been a lot of fun, so I'm sweet.
I need my microphone. apart from doing your own spray painting on the ground, Uzi, tell me, I'm looking at your hat. What does the hat on your head mean to you?
The baggy green means... Oh, sorry. The baggy green is so much now. I mean, back then, they used to give them out, right? Every tour. Maybe your day. You're not that old, are you? Dizzy might be. Back in the day, they used to give them out. They don't give them out anymore. So it's one of those things that you cherish. But I've had this conversation to the lads. I love my baggy green, but I'm not attached to my baggy green. I'm more attached to playing cricket for Australia. I can lose my baggy green. It's fine. It's materialistic. You know, think Sean Marshall got eaten by moths. And so these things can happen, but playing for Australia is that's what I'll always hold close to my heart. And I mean, these guys have done it. The dream feels so far away at times, especially when you're younger, especially when I came to New South Wales squad. I saw how good the players were, how good the batsmen were in particular. I was like, not sure if I'm up to this level. And finally cracked that level. And then you look at the next level, and you look at Michael Clark, I remember just even every time he came to the SCG or playing for New South Wales, he scored 100. I'm like, I can't score 100 every time I play, like, first-class cricket. How good is this guy? And he's, it always seems so far away. And then when you finally get there, you're like, how good's this? And you're like, wait a minute, I want to keep doing this. There's so many stages to it. And then when you reflect on it at the end of your career, you just think how lucky we are just to play one game, let alone being able to do it for about 15 years. So, yeah.
You spoke for 43 minutes in your farewell press conference.
I made the most of it, didn't I?
Rightfully so. I mean, it's your chance to have your say on the way out. You touched on a number of different topics. When you walk out of that and then you get ready to play a game of cricket in 48 hours, was it a distraction? Did you have much feedback? How did you go sort of moving on to what you had to do next, which was ultimately obviously playing this game?
It was tough. I'm not going to lie. I would have liked to announce it a little bit earlier. I mean, I told Andrew McDonald in Melbourne, like 5 days before I announced it, I told him, I knew in Adelaide, so I didn't tell anyone, but my wife knew. And I told him straight away, pretty much after the game finished, maybe a day or two afterwards. And I would have loved to do it then, but everyone was clocking off, going New Year's Eve and, you know, doing what they do. So it was like too hard to do it then. And we just lost a game, so I'm like, maybe it's not the right time. So I waited. It was a little bit of distraction, but once you get in the cricket, once you get in the game, I don't think it would have mattered no matter when I announced it. Retirement's always a little bit of a distraction because it is what it is. It's the last game, but I've really enjoyed this game. Hopefully we can finish off with a win.
Are you content when you walk out of international cricket tomorrow?
Oh, so content. Yeah, very much so. I think I look forward to not having to worry about sneaking off anymore. Yeah, it'll be good fun.
Uzi, warm-ups.
I was going to say, I saw you on the boat. You could have told me. We've been tight for a lot of years. Hey, Usman, just so you know, it was to me on a boat ride in Melbourne, and I completely brushed him. I just ignored him. And he said to me, I was going to text you later. I'm sorry. I apologise now.
You know when you get that wave from someone where they're like, wave at you, but you know he didn't recognise me. He gave me that like, yeah. You realise I'm Saf. Yeah, how you doing? Yeah, good. Someone else waved to me on the boat. I don't know if it was your wife. It was your son. Yeah, so I like, Saf. I played with him for about 5 years. He didn't recognise me.
Uzi, I hope tomorrow's the day you want it to be in Charlotte. Appreciate your time.
Well said. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks to Usman Khawaja, who's with us on Grandstand at Stumps on ABC Sport across the country. 8 for 302, England at Stumps on day 4. England leading by 119 runs in the Test match. Effectively 8 wickets down. Jacob Bethell is there, 142 not out at Stumps. The state of play, Jason Gillespie, Stuart Clark. What do you make of it as we sit here at the close of play on day 4?
Yeah, England, obviously 119 runs in front. You'd think it's not going to be enough. But as Uzi mentioned, you don't know. We have seen there's been history here in Sydney. Think back to the early 90s when South Africa defended a low total against Australia. Fani de Villiers got 6 for on a surface that was just offering a little bit of assistance and breaking up. But you just think with this England bowling attack, doesn't matter what they put on the board here, you sense with Australia's lengthened batting lineup that they should chase down whatever England set pretty comfortably.
Yeah, look, 8 down, leading by 119. You'd expect Australia to go good night's sleep, good rest, come out 75. The new ball's due in 5 overs' time. Yep. And then it'll be they don't want it to make 150, 160. Yeah. It starts to get a bit uncomfortable, but 120, Travis and the guys come out and play a few shots, and all of a sudden we're 50 or 60. The game sort of peters out from there. But that all said, I think, look, it's been actually a great Test match. The wickets had a little bit on offer. It's good, still good for batting, but starting to take some turn, which is a great thing. And we saw Webster pick up 3. So interesting day's cricket ahead, but Australia well in front.
There's so many threads to pick up on, and that is really the general theme, isn't it? Australia ahead in the Test match by 119 runs, 8 wickets down. So, England 8 wickets down, 119 in front. Australia, though, on top. The overall feel of the game on what is now essentially a second innings match. So if you throw that together, England effectively 8 for 119 in this second innings shootout. The story of the day, day 4, I think quite rightfully belongs to a precocious 22-year-old who grew up in Barbados. He made the move on scholarship to head to the UK and ultimately played for England. And here he is, a decade on, after making that huge move to a new country and the country that he calls home, England. He represents in a Test match for the 6th time today, and the 22-year-old tons up for the first time in first-class cricket in his 6th Test match. More on that in just a moment. Here's how he did it, as called by ABC Sport.
Webster comes in, bowls to Bethell. He does go down the ground and smashes him away into the leg side. That's the way to do it. And Jacob Bethel reaches his first Test century. And for all the England supporters who've watched this with broken hearts over the last few months, this is the future. Young man at number three. He's never scored a first-class 100 before. He comes with an immense reputation for promise and potential, nothing more. His dad, I see, actually, he's just having a bit of a quiet cry in the crowd there. Wonderful to be here. And this young man's going to score a lot more of these. Terrific innings. That was the first really ambitious shot that he's played throughout his innings. 162 balls.
I joked earlier that he'd been billed really as the second coming of England cricket. Here we go, you know, he's this young guy coming into the lineup. What's he going to be able to produce? I can see why all the hype today and what he was able to produce. Jacob Bethel at 22 in just his sixth Test match. I mean, it took Joe Root four tours to score 100 down here, obviously, against Australia. Have we seen the arrival of the next generational player or the next generational batsman in the England team?
I think we've certainly seen the arrival of a very, very good talent. And make no mistake, while there's some thinking in some quarters that he's been given lots of opportunities without having a bank of evidence underneath him in terms of performances, the expectations are real on him. So there's obviously, you know, he would be feeling the heat there, feeling the expectation, knowing that, well, I haven't actually done a lot in first-class cricket. I need to show what I can do. And I think the way he went about it, I mean, I was only talking to Ricky Ponting up in the media centre, and he was nearing his 100. And all he said to me is, if he actually gets there, gets this 100, that'll be one of the best 100s you'll see from a young kid making his first Test century. He said he's superb, and he is a real talent.
He certainly is a talent. And look, we didn't know a lot about him, but I'm just looking at just some pure. He's faced 232 balls. Takes a lot of effort and concentration to get that right. He's 142 now, so he can score, obviously. And look, we watched him, but technically he looks quite sound. Lets the ball go, plays off both feet. And when you're getting the likes of Ricky Ponting coming out and saying this guy's got something about him, then you've got to sit here and you've got to listen. So from my perspective, not knowing and seeing a lot of Jacob Bethel beforehand, a real, real positive out of this tour where they're probably going to lose 4-1, but certainly someone they can work with moving forward.
How's this for stat for modern cricket? Jacob Bethel faced 232 balls. All last summer in England in red ball cricket, he faced 200 balls. So that's the way the modern game is going, Saf. It's, you know, it's very, very different.
His parents, as Jonathan Agnew alluded to in the call, in the crowd, in tears at the end of it. I mean, that rings bells, doesn't it? Any level of cricket anywhere in the world, the human side of it. And so for a young man to break through and score his 100 today, this is a player we're going to be talking about, I'm sure, for many years to come. He's got this quirky nature about him, numbers at the moment, where he averages 9 in the first innings. He averages 100 plus in the second innings. So the only times that he's gone past 50 have all been second inning scores. Usually it's the other way, isn't it? Earlier in a Test match, generally the wickets are better for batting up front, and then it gets more difficult as the Test goes on. And yet, even the 40 that he got in Melbourne in a low-scoring match, again, came in the second innings after missing out in the first. Well, what do you put that down to?
Wickets are really green.
Yeah, I was about to say that, Saf. Yeah.
Wickets got a lot of life in them. He's getting out, and then as the wickets flatten out, he becomes a better player. If they play on some flat wickets in England, which they can do towards the end of the summer over there in their summer season, and he bats at 3 and gets in and he plays like that, oh, he's going to be a pain in the neck for a few teams, because there was Australia, to be fair, Australia had no answer for him today, and he's still obviously still in 142 not out. But think about that innings. Like he put it hot, he took on Stark, no drama. Boland, who, and interesting with Boland was going around the wicket, over the wicket, which Howard's got out in the first innings, but he worked out a way to deal with that. So you can see he's thinking about his cricket. If he keeps going and on the trajectories, you know, if he keeps on this trajectory, well, who knows where he ends up, but they've found it. They've got found someone that can bat.
What do we reckon of how the wicket's playing? So, I mean, you look at today that we saw a bit of bowling from Bo Webster. So he ended up taking, you know, career best figures. He's got 3 for something he's never done in the past previously. That was after making 71 not out earlier in the day, but we'll get to that in just a moment. So out of the first 5 dismissals that occurred, 4 of them were either bowled or LBW. Is the deck playing a little more a little more variable bounce than perhaps we saw earlier in the test?
I think it's definitely a bit more variable bounce. What I did notice was some balls that more jumped at the batters rather than kept low. I know dismissals have been bowled in that, but those off the back of a length, and you know, particularly Nisa and Scotty Boland were the ones that were able to extract that movement off this surface. Just a bit spicier, and that was particularly with the newer ball. And yeah, obviously we saw some twist and turn from Bo Webster, which is expected on day four in Sydney.
We don't often see him bowl the slow stuff. He's off spinners. In the COVID break, basically he got together with Adam Griffith, who's obviously one of his coaches down in Tasmania, former Tasmanian quick. They basically worked together to get him to bowl medium pace. And at 2 metres tall, he's obviously become a very effective medium-fast bowler. He basically bowls first change for Tasmania. So from really 2020, 2021 onwards, he's barely bowled off-spin. Really, the only time that he's done that, I think he rolled out one or two overs in Sri Lanka. Barely got a look in there, and then he comes out and bowls here. Obviously comes from a great height and able to get plenty of bounce. He also got a bit of turn today. So does it reinforce that they did the right thing picking Bo Webster and having that option, or do you think that a frontline spinner would have been effective here at this stage of the test?
Well, we're going to dangerous territory, aren't we, Gould? I think they should have picked a frontline spinner. That's still my opinion. That hasn't changed. Webster's done a really good job, and we've seen out here that the wicket is spinning. So there is a use and there is a utility for having spin in your team. Now, they didn't think, and I suppose this comes back to their theory, that what's the best way to get 20 wickets? Well, they thought part-time spin is better than full-time spin, but I'm not of that ilk. I think they should have picked a full-time and a spinner, given the seam options they've got.
Do you think as well, Saf, though, that they're thinking that games aren't going into the fifth day anymore, and sometimes they're not even going into the fourth day, so a spinner is less effective in the first 3 days of a test match, so let's stack our team with seamers?
Yeah, that's probably got a little bit. And I think these are all the things that are going into it, and these are all the things that we're looking at and critiquing, because we're not as close to it as the players. They're looking at the wicket, they're talking to the groundsman, they've been here for a couple of days, they've been looking at stats, they've got bucket loads of analysts up in the room that are looking at all these different anomalies or statistics. So they come up with a formula that's the best way to get 20 wickets, and that is what we're trying to work at. And that's the only thing they probably really need to care about, is how do we get 20 wickets and how do we do it as cheaply as possible?
You guys both alluded to that the pitch out here, is this good cricket wicket?
I think it is. I think it's now probably a little bit bat friendly, but that's okay, because I think there's still a little bit of up and down, and if you get it right with the new ball, I think that there's still enough on offer. So I'm giving it an A, without doubt.
I'm giving it an A as well. I think it's a good cricket wicket. I think you get what you put in. As a bowler, you get out of what you put in, and the bowlers that have looked to pitch the ball up and hit the stumps. Michael Nisa got 4 for 60 off 18 overs in the first innings. So, and then we've seen Josh Tung pick up wickets, Bryden Cast, Bo Webster's got some with spin, and Scotty Bowen with seam. So it's provided something for everyone.
This is Grandstand at Stumps on ABC Sport. Corbin Middlemass alongside Jason Gillespie and Stuart Clark. Just to recap the state of play, England leading by 119 runs, so 8 wickets down for 302 in their second innings. But as is now a second innings game, effectively England 8 wickets for 119. That is the lead in the match. And Jacob Bethell still there with 142 not out. Just a quick recap in what we saw today. The Aussies added 49 to their overnight score to be all out for 567, losing their last three poles. Steve Smith, 138, added only 9 to his overnight tally. The Aussies led by 183 on the first innings. A couple of things to note in the morning session. Bo Webster, 71 not out. So it's his fifth half century in the limited test cricket that he's played. It's his second highest score, behind only the 72 that he got at Lord's, where he was the top scorer for Australia in the World Test Championship final against South Africa. And the other thing to note was Ben Stokes, who, of course, injured his groin. He had to withdraw midway through one of his overs, what turned out to be his 28th over with the ball, and Jacob Bethell had to come on and finish that. We saw him bat later in the day, and really it looked like, and you were on commentary with me at the time, Tiz, and you mentioned that it felt like he could only really run in straight lines.
Yeah.
So the fact that he got back out there and batted, but it hasn't been his tour. He's looking to play a cut shot, got a thick edge, and it was caught by Steve Smith at first slip. He was one of Webster's three victims.
Yeah, he was, and look, he cut a pretty forlorn figure walking off the ground, both when he hurt his groin And when he obviously got out, he was really disappointed with the shot he played. It probably turned and bounced just a little bit more than he expected from Bo Webster. But, yeah, he's disappointed. And I think as much as anything, because he's given himself the very best chance this tour, Ben Stokes. He's looked after himself. He's got himself fit and strong and robust. He's watched his diet and dietary intake and the like. And he's put all his eggs into this basket, this cricket tour, and it hasn't quite gone to plan. And, you know, he'll feel that deeply.
So just repeating that stump score, 119 is the lead for England. They are 8 wickets down, though, in their second innings, which brings us to day 5 coming up tomorrow. We get to a fifth day for the second time in the series, but it is only the, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17th day in the series? 18th day, sorry, in the series. So 18th day of the series overall. It will be the final day. The crowd today, by the way, was the best day four crowd we've had at the SCG since Bodyline. So you have to go back to 32-33, the last time we had a crowd this large. 42,864 was the final attendance for the fourth day. Tomorrow, $30. All funds go to a split between the McGrath Foundation and the Cricket Australia Foundation. So the McGrath Foundation still pushing, trying to get towards that magical figure of 480,000 virtual seats. If you are able and you're in a position to do so, you can donate by heading to pinktest.com.au. Of course, all money goes towards the cancer care nurses. But the test match attendance is 185,185. So that's a significant figure across 4 days. And what better day to come along than tomorrow? So it'll be the final day of the series. It'll be the last day, obviously, Usman Khawaja walks onto an international cricket field. But either way, it's going to be the day where Australia are going to get the urn at some stage, whether win, lose or draw or tie, who knows. We will see, obviously, the Australians presented with the crystallised urn at the end of the day.
Absolutely correct. Excellent. It'll be an excellent day's cricket where the trophy will be presented. You'll get to see the celebrations. You'll get to see everything that goes with it. But it is just, it'll be a great day's cricket. It's, you know, Sydney's obviously turned it on to this year with the weather. It's going to be nice and warm. And you get to celebrate in what has been a really great series. They come around every 4 years, Ashes series, and the way it's been embraced by the whole country this summer, whether it be Perth, Adelaide, Brisbane, Melbourne, even though it didn't go for it, but even the way they embraced it down there. Tomorrow caps off what's been a great series, and they come along, as I said, every once in every 4 years, and Dizzy and myself have been lucky to be part of them. Mm. Why not be here and have a look?
Is there something special about the last day of an Ashes series? I mean, the one that obviously you played in 06-07 was different for a number of reasons. Three of the all-time greats left the game. But what do you remember from that last day?
I was man of the match. Oh, sorry. I thought, look, what do I remember from that day? It was actually that test match was the first time Mum and Dad came and watched me play live.
Wow.
Because my first tests were, I was in South Africa and then Bangladesh, and then we basically travelled around the country and they came here. So that's very memorable and very special to me. But look, I probably... Ashes series, but I probably played in one that's a bit different to most because three legends of the game pulled up stumps. I don't know, you can probably remember, various... The celebrations are great, I do remember that.
Yeah, the celebrations are... I mean, here at the SCG... The change rooms, they're all like old change rooms, aren't they? But they've been rehashed and redone. Underneath, like you have a few drinks in the change rooms, but then there's a tradition here at SCG. You bang your bat on the floor, and then the cellars underneath, and the boys, if they knock the bat back, it signals you can go down to the wine cellar, and they allow you to choose a bottle to take back up for the boys. And, yeah, it's just one of those quirky little traditions that just make this place a little bit special.
It will be a special day. And speaking to people that have been to so many over the years, they say, look, doesn't matter what the state is in the series, whether it's, 4-0 or 4-1 or 5-0 or whatever it turns out to be, it's always a special day when the urn is presented. And we will see that here at the SCG tomorrow. An early start still to make up for lost time on day one. So 9:30 we're on air, Australian Eastern Daylight Time, the first ball from 10 a.m. We've got one more topic.
Yeah.
Have you got something you want to jump in with?
I'm coming in shorts and a T-shirt tomorrow. I've got no corporate function, so I'm coming relaxed.
You've been busy, boy.
Yeah.
Actually, I might wear a singlet. Can you wear a singlet up there?
You've had that many corporate gigs this week. Every time I know something serious is up and he's about to make the trek to the other side of the ground and visit the Cricket New South Wales box, he takes the blazer off the hanger. The blazer goes on. It's like, right, business time, off you go.
So you haven't had any freebies either?
No, I mean, been... It's been a great week, actually. Well, I did go, you did very kindly invite me in. I went and had a little look the other day at the nice. Cricket New South Wales box. That's how to watch cricket. And I tell you, they're doing it right in there. One topic before we go, a bit of a fun one. So Bo Webster today obviously comes on Bolsey's off spin, touched on it during Grandstand at Stumps earlier in the pod. But the players that bowl both disciplines, basically, a medium pacer as well as a finger spinner. I mean, it's a pretty rare skill, and one that Bo's developed, obviously, given that he's become a medium pacer later in life, having bowled off-spin before that. I think the obvious ones we think of immediately are Andrew Simons and Colin Miller as guys that obviously did it for the Australian cricket team. But what about you guys in your cricketing journeys? Any sort of hidden talents from players, even in the nets or whatever it turns out to be, that particularly a fast bowler is also a very gifted tweaker or vice versa?
I remember Brad Williams, a fast bowler from Victoria and Western Australia. He could actually bowl some half. He only ever bowled them in the nets, but he actually bowled quite decent off spin. And they actually turned and bounced. And so much so that we were on a tour of Sri Lanka, and I think there was thought of he might have actually bowled an over or two of them. They were quite good. Yeah,
I used to bowl my slower ball like a leg spinner. It used to be like, you know, Kumble bowled those. So when the wickets got really dusty out the back, I just bowl slower balls. And I used to call them my Kumbles. And I had a running bet going with Brad Haddon that I said, if I get fifer, if you let me bowl them in a Shield game, and I get fifer, you've got to keep in a floppy hat, which is completely off the mark. So we had this ongoing for about 5 years, and every time the wicket got dusty, I'd say, come on, let me bowl some Kumbles, and he'd go, no, no, no. But they weren't great, by the way, and I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have got fifer, but he was so worried about having to wear a floppy kit that he wouldn't let me do it.
Of course, Marnus Labuschagne in more recent times.
Bowls leg spin
and has taken to bowl in his medium paces as well, so it's a great party trick. It doesn't happen all that often, obviously, in modern cricket for guys that are able to bowl both disciplines. I did chat to the voice of summer, Jim Maxwell, on the way out. He said, look, Alan Davidson did it over the years, and Bill Johnson, and of course Tony Gregg, famously, as well as a couple of guys over the years.
Bruce Yardley.
Ricky Ponting, did he might bowl some seamers in a few offies?
Yep.
He did. I'm pretty sure he did that too.
All right. Don't forget, tomorrow 9:30 a.m. our coverage begins Australian Eastern Daylight Time on what is going to be day 5, the last day of the Ashes series. England resuming 8 wickets down with a lead of 119. The Big Bash tonight on ABC Sport Digital. You'll be getting coverage of the Scorchers and the Renegades. It is about to begin. Hope you can join us tomorrow right here on Grandstand Cricket on ABC Sport for the culmination of the Ashes.